The Lock-In Podcast is brought to you by Rotocloud, the all-in-one solution for managing hospitality teams. Rotocloud lets you plan and share rotas, record attendance, and manage your team's annual leave, all in less time than it takes to make a brew. It also makes life easier for your staff, allowing them to check their rotas, request annual leave, and even pick up extra shifts, all through the Rotocloud mobile app. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotocloud.com/lock-in. Hello and welcome to the Lock-In Podcast, the show that lifts the lid on the pub trade by those working in it. I'm the morning advertiser's Ed Bennington, and with me as ever are my delightful co-hosts James Cuthbertson and Heath Ball. This episode we're going to be looking at the challenging financial situation facing the pub sector. Heath has lately found himself, like many operators, struggling to make ends meet. Loss of business during the lockdown, following by escalating energy costs and spiralling staff wages, has meant he's trying to tighten his belt to the extent that he's only been able to visit San Sebastian twice this month.
And France.
You're right. Alright, James on the other hand doesn't pretend to understand the concept of tightening his belt. Or is that a girdle? I don't know. It's more a constant loosening, isn't it?
I'll tell you what it was. It was very, very telegraphed and obvious, but thank you, Edward.
I thought you are much literally just... Food is just arriving at the table in front of me just to prove my point.
Yeah, exactly. Man's going to eat.
I'm enjoying the industry. Thank you. Well, thank you for eating and chewing on the recording here. I'm sure it'll be delightful. Everyone will love to hear your masticating.
Oh, no, I wasn't doing that. Not on Valentine's night.
Moving swiftly on, yeah.
Love it when you do this.
Yeah, thank you. As I said, we'll be looking at finance in this episode. We'll be welcoming back a previous guest, Chris Warden of First Business Rescue, who'll be talking about debt management. We'll also be talking about escalating utility challenges with the BII, Steve Alton, and hearing from crowdfunding specialist Clive Revel about, oddly enough, crowdfunding. We're also recording this episode in the recently refurbished Cadogan Arms, and we'll be catching up with MD...
Isn't it Cadogan?
Cadogan, yeah.
I knew
I was going to mangle that. I should have spelled it phonetically. Cadogan Arms.
It's not that hard.
If anyway, standards, we start that again.
Thanks. No, I don't think so, do you?
No.
I mean, we have no airs and graces, do we?
No.
There we go. But we'll be catching up with MD Dom Jacobs to talk about investment as well, and how you pronounce his pop's name. It's probably going to be on that agenda. For all that, what's been going on, guys? What's got Heath ranting this week? Because let's face it, you're in a really good mood at the moment, and I just started on you as you shoveled food into your mouth.
It's Valentine's Day, Ed.
I know, that's why I'm here with you two.
I can't, honestly. It winds me up. But anyway, was it 12% wage increase across hospitality sector that was reported in the news today as a good thing?
Good news story.
Is it
good
really news. A good thing?
Well, I don't think you tell me.
Well, not really. Not. All we're doing is we're in a bidding war with each other to get staff. We're getting people coming and trying to poach our staff. And all we're doing is driving prices up of people who really sometimes aren't that good at what they do. And they're getting paid a lot more money to go. It's just
when you say sometimes.
Well, most of the time.
I mean, are you talking about your own staff?
No, I'm just talking about staff in general. I mean, it's hard enough getting people as now, and then you've got all these people coming in with big budgets and new openings and just trying to poach people.
It's not sustainable.
Yeah, it's not sustainable, and then they're just going to keep on going poach, and to what point?
Well, chefs have had that run for a while now, haven't they? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
So do you think that the kind of problems we've had with the chefs is now going to be translating across the piece?
Oh,
you're paying top money for crap average chefs, aren't you, really?
Mm. I mean, we've already established your wives don't listen to this, but clearly your staff don't as well, so...
I don't think my staff will.
They would tell them anyway.
Yeah, but it's a tough one. Like, we're in a... You know what I mean? All these things and all these good news stories, and there's so many people in hospitality and they're earning 50 grand a year. Yeah, they need all this pay rise. They need all this because everything's got expensive.
Yeah, and they do need... It's not that they don't... In some ways, no one deserves to earn... You want to earn less. But the cost of living is just... The problem is the operators aren't being compensated. Back to this whole issue about rating and all the rest of it. You know, there's no... We seem to be the one that need to absorb...
You're being squeezed.
All the increased costs.
That middle.
Our consumer won't take it.
Yeah, so where do we put the prices up? And then what?
Well, you're going to have to, aren't you? What else do you do?
Yeah, then all you have is people coming and going, oh, I went there the other day, so much more expensive than it was before. And you're like, really? Do you watch the news?
And then basically everyone just goes to Wetherspoons.
Mm. I got my first...
It's all that'll be left.
Yeah, I got my first electricity bill at the Red after like coming out of contract, and it's £3,000 was £1,600. Mm-hmm. It's just going to keep on going up and up. Like, mm-hmm. how do you absorb that? Do you know, really? You pass it on to your customers, but how long are they going to like that?
Well, I mean, ultimately, I think it's going to be a situation, this is going to be across the board, isn't it? It's not just you guys having to put your price up. Everyone is going to have to put their prices up. So,
everyone is.
Consumers are going to have to suck it up if they want to go out.
Different. If you're a retailer, though, you've got price increases over every supplier. Mm. It's not just one thing, not just electricity, or you know, it's all your food. Mm. Mm. It's just everything.
But that is the same for everyone. We're all in the same boat, aren't we?
I suppose we end up where we were before. Like it's like the ones that people really want to go to, the pubs and the restaurants that they really want to go to, are really going to survive. And we're just going to lose that bottom end of the market. And everybody goes, oh, but it's weeding out the thing. But we need diversity in the range of pubs and restaurants we go to. It all can't be the ones, the strongest ones.
Because you want to keep that customers out of your pub, aren't we?
It all can't be the ones that are the strongest to survive. We do need diversity in the pub trade and restaurants. We can't just all be like the top operators fighting it out, because it's not going to work.
I mean, a lot of people talk about the pubs as being an affordable treat.
Tom Kerridge's.
You had to jump in there with that, didn't you?
Yeah.
88 quid a steak's good.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's always been the kind of thing, hasn't it? I mean, are we going to remain that affordable treat?
Nah. We're not. You know, I suppose Witherspoon's will. But even them, you go to Witherspoon's, their prices have gone up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Hmm. Now, 70p a pint.
Yeah, I don't know, man. We're in a... Like, it goes back... I think it all goes back to the government's got no respect for what we do. But they know we innovate. We know we're creative. They know that we'll adapt. They know that. They know that we'll adapt. But they've still got no respect for what we do. So, but
you will adapt, won't you? I mean, this
is you will. Thing, you'll hustle it out. But it's tiring. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've done 2 years of like been innovating and trying to bounce around COVID and do that and do that. And it's just like, it's every time, you know, you think you're getting ahead, you know, we get another slap down the, you know, it's just electricity, gas.
Wasn't there a survey this week about consumers thinking pubs were, or hospitality was over-treated more generously or something?
The raising the bar report, I think it was by the all-parliamentary pass group for beer, I think, did a survey of trade and consumers, and apparently 60% of consumers disapprove of the level of government support that the sector receives.
Go and live in Germany then, go and live in France, look how much money they got.
Or Ukraine.
But they got a lot more money than us. They did, like America. They did. Well, America got millions for his sites. Mm-hmm. We, you know what I mean? Again, do not value it. We don't deserve it. We're just the pub. We're not that bright. That's the dialogue I get from customers. And it's true, though.
Do you know
what I mean? And it's just like, it just winds you up. They've got no respect. Government's got no respect. Punters have got no respect. But yet they love pubs, and they want the pubs to be like, oh, I could just walk into the pub and have a drink. Why can't I do that anymore?
It's the same when they moan they lose their village pub. They haven't been there for 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the one thing, though, I mean, there's a story broke today, this morning as we're recording this, the In Collection Group has just been sold, it's got new owners. I mean, that's not to Rooney, amazingly. But that shows people still, despite what you're saying,
here's the reality.
People still want to invest.
Yeah, if you do, you get it right, and you work hard, and you've got a good plan, you can make a lot of money. Mm. That's the reality.
Oh, the Rooney thing's just a big game monopoly. No, just collect this, collect that. I mean, how can you possibly put... How can you possibly put infrastructure around that?
Potentially it's a property play, isn't it?
Yeah.
But there are others that are investing into it.
Listen, there's money. There's money in hospitality. You get it right, there's money in it. And if you get your head around, like we were with a friend the other week, talking, he's got a restaurant, he's doing really, really well. We do okay. Like, we're not, you know, I can cry from that. We actually do okay. We don't, but it's harder than it should be. It's a lot harder than it should be. Do you know what I mean? Like, all these things, all these increases all the time. You know, I don't trust this government. Got no respect.
I've never picked up on that. Do you get that thing? He's not a fan?
No, it's not. But listen, it's not much better anywhere else in the bloody world.
And pointing out the window, James, doesn't work on a podcast, by the way. Can I just...
That guy's coat.
It's a very multicoloured coat.
It's Valentine's Day, James. Leave him alone.
Well, I mean, we'll come on to that in a second, because this might be the source of Heath's grumpiness today. But Boris stood up in a couple of weeks, maybe less. He's going to end all restrictions, potentially. Wales have just thought about maybe losing the passports and masks. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not behind the curve at all on that, but what do we think? Are we... we applauding Boris or wondering what he's hiding?
I think as operators, I'm caught in two minds. It's great. Let's get rid of all the restrictions. Let's just get back to trading. But don't trust them. You know what I mean? It's just a constant structure. I was listening to the radio this morning. Some guy reckons that Putin's helping Boris out. Putin's helping Boris out by causing all this trouble down in Ukraine. Mm. To help Boris get the destruction away. That's a good friend. My mates wouldn't even cross the road to help me across.
That's true.
And he's talking about you there, James.
Exactly.
Conscious of time, we need to move on, but I think it is Valentine's Day. Obviously, that's probably why he's grumpy, because his wife's probably expecting him to take him out to dinner, isn't
it? I've already made that clear. And she promised me she's going to cook dinner tonight, and I'm pretty sure she won't.
I was going to say...
I told her I'm working. I'd rather be at work watching couples be miserable than be me being at home.
Hang on, I thought
miserable.
You were taking James and I out to dinner.
I always snigger, though, when there's a table of three on Valentine's night. You think, oh, yeah... Do you not? Maybe, my mind.
What are you thinking?
Well, I'm just thinking, you know.
What, freeway?
Heath, I wasn't going to say that. No, I wasn't going to say that. Out. Exactly what I was going to say. I wasn't being mucky. Heath, that's what you did there. Yeah, and no, I do think a bit mucky like that.
Fair enough. Actually. On that note, let's end this one here. You're listening to the Lock In Podcast and we're talking finances. We've gone through a long period of disturbed and disturbing trading, and with prices going up, operators are going to be struggling to balance the books. We've got Chris Warden here with us today from First Business Rescue, and he's going to be giving us some advice on key issues for operators to be thinking about. So Chris, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me down.
We've had you on before. I think we've touched on some of this, but maybe we can dig a little bit more into it. I mean, what should operators be thinking about at the moment? We've got March fast approaching. It's that sort of almost like cliff edge of debt that's going to come sort of pouring onto people. What should operators be thinking about? How should they be sort of budgeting and looking at the current market?
I think the most important thing is they have accurate information. You know, now's the time is to look at your numbers, look at your cash flows, do some detailed projections. You know, it's important they see things as they are, not worse than they are. But at what point is your business, if any? We talked about it earlier, pinch points. Mm. Now, the problems that your industry's facing at the moment with these projections is everything keeps going up.
Yeah.
You know, you've got your energy prices that are going out of control. From what the chaps I speak to in this industry, it's everything else as well. Mm. You know, food. National minimum wage.
Yeah.
You know that there's anything that's inflationary is a problem, and arguably you're one of the worst hit industries, not only from what happened, you know, a couple of years ago, but inflation's really giving, you know, your bottom line a kick in.
Mm.
So yeah, I think you've just got to be aware of what's coming, get detailed management information. I would say, you know, negotiate hard with suppliers. I mean, still do that, but you know,
they're under the same pressures, aren't they?
Exactly. Well. Yeah. You know, it's easy to say try and get a better deal, but sadly, I mean, we spoke about it a minute ago, Heath. What was the, you know, the energy prices that you guys are?
Oh God, it was 1,600 a month to $3,000, and I'm out of contract. I'm sitting out of contract, waiting for a decent contract. And the guys I use to look at our electricity is just saying, like, don't go into contract with anybody. You've got a better rate right now until they push it up, just sit where you are. But that's so much money. How do you budget for that?
It's like, well, I mean, the irony is, I mean, we've been talking about the sort of the end of the moratoriums, you know, and lots of this debt coming due in March for quite some time. But we weren't also factoring in these energy increases, you know, the general inflationary pressures. I mean, none of this was even being talked about until sort of fairly recently, really, wasn't it? It's come up. So, I mean, it's a tsunami of extra problems.
Not helped by the nervousness of war as well. You know, I mean, seriously, that's not going to help any market.
Well, they're saying that could affect our gas prices. Mm. Even though we get stuff from Norway and the North Sea.
Yeah, yeah.
Still, we could be real trouble.
Yeah.
I think, you know, just some practical advice with debts that are falling due. You know, whether it's C-bills, you know, bounce back loans, there is a thing called pay as you grow. It will ease your cash flow. You get onto your bank, you can have a 6 month payment holiday. If you've already exhausted that, which a lot of people have, you can go on to interest only 3 times during the term of your loan.
Right.
So again, if you get, also for people that haven't, you can extend that bounce back loan from 6 years to 10 years. It's going to bring your payments down by almost half. Now, please, anyone who's listening, bear in mind, if you use one of these options, you're going to pay more interest. But the money's that cheap.
Yeah, 2%.
And remember, it's non-secure as well. So if you can just kick it down the line a little bit to hope that your trade improves. I said it on the last time I was here. If you've got HMRC arrears, guys, even if you're in a time to pay arrangement, my advice, if you are struggling to make ends meet, get back on the phone to the revenue and play hardball with them. Certainly if you're a limited company, and I think most people are in the industry now, you can say to them, listen, if you force me into liquidation, it's highly likely the revenue will get nothing. Mm. Now, don't, be careful how you talk to them. But at the end of at the end of the day, they are flexible. They're being lenient. I've seen time to pay arrangements go over 3 years, which was unheard of before COVID. And you've got the power when you're dealing with the revenue. You've got a lot of power because they want their money in some way. They're just going to have to wait for it with a lot of people. So get back on the phone and negotiate hard with the revenue.
Will that impact their credit status?
No.
So interest only and things like that won't impact their...
So bounce back loans, if a bounce back loan goes into default, it will impact the business's credit status. Yeah. But if it goes into default, it's highly likely that the business is, it's come to an end anyway. Yeah. So it's in a liquidation. So yeah, and dealing with the revenue, it's not public knowledge if you have a time to pay arrangement with the revenue. The only time that the world knows that you've got a revenue issue is if you do something called a CVA, company voluntary arrangement, where you lump all your unsecured debts into one pot and you pay it over an extended period of time, generally 5 years. But it's not a golden bullet because you'll struggle to get a pack of fags on credit if you're in a CVA. Something that needs to be thought long and hard about.
Yeah.
I mean, you talked about you had 3 interest-free options or times you could do it with a bounce back. Is that just month?
No, you can go interest-free for 6 months, Ed.
Right.
So you can do 3 lots of 6 months at interest-free throughout the term of the year. So it might be when cash flow's tight, it's... These are difficult months, aren't they? January, February, March, till we sort of hit Easter and get the better weather. So, and it's really easy to do this, guys. You log on to the account that you was given the loan through, and there should be payment options, and it's a click of a button. So,
and the banks being helpful with this? I mean, or are we? I mean, I know there's sort of degrees of variation, but I mean, are they generally being helpful with this? Or is it, I think we talked about it was a bit of a surprise when we talked about this last time.
Yeah.
I didn't realise we could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because banks weren't publicising it.
I think the banks are lost, if I'm honest. You know, it's like that there are businesses that cannot afford these bounce back loans. They cannot, they took them in the right manner. They were entitled to them. They've spent the money on what they should have been spent on, and it's getting to the point where they can't afford to pay it. They can't even afford a liquidator's fees.
Right.
So they're on the phone to me. They go, "Well, what do I do?" I said, "Well, speak to the bank and tell them, ask them to wind you up. Close me down because I can't afford to run. I'm not trading." The banks don't seem to know what to do with it at the moment.
Right.
So I think the pay-as-you-grow option is really helpful. You know, it gives you some breathing space. Just to reiterate, you can restructure your loan from 6 years to 10 years. You can get a interest-only break 3 times during that term of 6 months each. And you can also do a one-time 6 months without a payment. Remember, your interest goes up ever so slightly, but... it's anything at the moment to ease cash flow.
What grinds on me, though, is us honest and trustworthy operators are paying these loans back. We're doing the best we can. and there was so much fraud with it. It's all getting written off, and you're sitting there going, great, all those people have got away, they're all on holiday, whatever, doing all this money, and we're sitting here paying these loans back.
Name it? No, please don't.
Name some names if you want. But yeah, it just seems, you know, like, I took, great, I'll pay it back, and that's the way I work, and that's the way we work in business. But it just seems like, well, how much was the fraud on it? It was an obscene figure.
Obscene. Billions.
Yeah. And here we are paying these loans back, and everyone's trying to get back on our feet. The government's going to bring VAT back up. We just, like, it seems like we're just getting hit with all these barrage of costs, and it's just like, cut us a break. Do you know?
I mean, go on, Chris.
I mean, let me just, I know there's been in the press recently that Sunak's saying a lot of this is going to be written off to fraud. So what we're seeing right now is the insolvency service are jumping on people that have inflated turnover. Now, the banks are even doing this now, because I don't know if you remember, when you applied for your loan,
Yeah, percentage of your turnover.
Yeah, but it was self-certification.
Okay. Yes.
So there were businesses that got 50 grand in their account the day after that had never had that type of money. They weren't entitled to it.
Okay.
Now, the banks never checked on day one, but retrospectively now, we've had inquiries where the banks have gone, well, you wasn't entitled to that turnover, and they're claiming the money, and they've gone, we want the money back.
Oof. Right, okay.
Now,
so they're not getting away with it.
If somebody is, so when you...
Are they worried that you can't afford to pay it back, so they want to get it now, so that you're not in a position where you're going to default?
Well, I'm not sure of the motivation, but there was one, I've had this a lot from the property industry, who took the loans. They took more than, I'm generalising here, but they took the loans and they've used it for property deals, or they've used it, other businesses have used it to lend other companies money. Now, when you took the loan, you had to certify that this would be for the benefit of that company that took it. So, regardless if someone goes into an insolvency procedure, because, listen, if you go into a liquidation, an insolvency practitioner is going to look at the conduct of the director. Now, anybody who tells you any difference, lying to you. And the key things they're going to look at are, were you entitled to take the loan? Did you take the right amount? But also, what have you spent the money on? Now, if you've spent the money on running the business, you know, HMRC, general business costs, and it's the end of the line, and you've tried your best, well, the loan will be written off. Okay, I mean, we're all going to pay for it, aren't we? In fact, our kids will pay for this. But if there's been any wrongdoing, any misfeasance, you know, misappropriation of company funds, we are seeing the insolvency service go for the jugular.
There you go.
Big disqualifications.
I've heard some stories of people that have bought art.
I mean,
like, you know what I mean? I've heard some stories, you've just gone, wow, okay.
There will be a reckoning then. Yeah. I'm conscious of the time, Chris. I mean, just to wrap up, if you are unfortunately faced with, you know, having to wind your business up, what would your key advice be there to operators?
I think the key advice is take advice early. You know, liquidation can be avoided if you go early enough. You know, there are restructuring tools that you can use. I touched on the CVA. We are seeing a lot of operators now who have had viable businesses up to COVID, and it's just knocked the wind out of them. So they've got a good business, they might have revenue debt, they might have a C-bills or a bounce back loan. They're considering pre-packs where this business that's insolvent is not going to survive. They set up a new company with the same directors. They legally purchase the assets of the old company. You know, that could be goodwill, fixtures and fittings, even the company name, and they're starting again debt-free. You've got to be careful. It needs to be a well-thought-out procedure, this, and it's not suitable for everybody.
For years, there's been some scrupulous operators that have done that in our industry who've just, that's the way they've operated. Like, oh, yeah, I'm in a bit of trouble. Right, clean it up and just reopen. You know, and it's done us no favours.
But what you are seeing as well, again, the scrutiny on this phoenixing, which is known, and it's not popular. The insolvency service are looking at that closer now. But again, if you're there and if you're doing it just to avoid paying your debt and you're going to do it again, that you're going to get tripped up. Mm-hmm. But if it's the only option that you can continue to go through and you can prove that this business model is viable, it might be something you want to look at. Equally, you know, if it's the end of the road, and we're seeing it is the end of the road for a lot of establishments, closing the business down and making sure that you do it without making the creditors' positions any worse, you know, liquidating the business and sort of throwing the keys back. Listen, these rules can be abused, sadly, you know, and that's the reality of it. And it's sad for people that get taken in these liquidations. And it's harder for you guys who are trying to operate on a level playing field. I mean, what I want to say to people is, if they've got cause for concern over their businesses, having a chat early about their options, because there's certain things that people need to be aware of. In insolvency, generally, we're quite disruptive in what we do. We our advice is to the director on day one and go, listen, this is where you may fall down a hole. We look at overdrawn directors' loans, any misfeasance claims. People will walk blindly into a liquidation, pay $4,000 thinking the problem's going away, and 3 months down the line, they're having letters being chased for tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of pounds. And a lot of the time, it's avoidable. People don't know the questions to ask in these scenarios, which makes them really, really vulnerable. And again, I'm talking out there to the honest operators. You know, if you've done something wrong, you will get penalised. You know, it's nobody can turn a blind eye to this type of thing.
Good stuff. Okay, well, we are out of time, so seek advice early. It's probably the
speak to
the
Chris.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Chris.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks for inviting us, lads.
Cheers.
Pleasure.
This is the Lock-In Podcast with myself, Ed Beddington, James Cuthbertson and Heath Ball. We're focusing on all things money in this episode, and we're going to have a chat about crowdfunding with Clive Raffel, who is an SME marketing and crowdfunding specialist. Welcome, Clive.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Good stuff. I mean, so to start, let's put a hypothetical situation to you. Heath is running a really popular pump, and all his locals really love him and his business. I did say it was hypothetical. He wants to launch a new site, but he lacks the funding to do it. How can he tap into that love and turn it into cold, hard cash?
There's straightforward ways of using donations crowdfunding. For things like that. He's got a loyal customer base, so that's people who are predisposed to contribute to your business expansion ideas. And a common way of doing it is to reward people with incentives, with perks. That makes it reward-based crowdfunding. And it's really a way of being able to bring forward your income from your proposed expansion. It may be things as straightforward as if you donate £50 today, I'll give you credit of £100 behind the bar. You've got to work out what your long-term liabilities are going to be, but if you've got a strong customer base, things like that can be very successful.
Isn't that what Gary Usher did up in
Liverpool.
Up that way, up north.
Gary Usher, celebrity chef up in Merseyside, he's launched 5 restaurants using significant amounts raised from Kickstarter in just that way of bringing forward income.
Part of me is almost like, though, but hold on. Surely you can finance these yourself now. Do you know, is that like, as an operator, I'm thinking like...
Well, then you've got to that scale. You mean,
surely you just go to the bank and say, this is what I'm doing, this is my cash flow, this is what I've got, can you lend me some cash?
I assume there's advantages to doing it the way he does it, though.
There are advantages to crowdfunding, because beyond just the actual amount of money that can be raised, what you're doing is rewarding customers and tying them in even closer. And for some new businesses, they see it as a way of creating a network of brand ambassadors who are going to work hard, give strong word of mouth to all their friends and contacts. There was, and as you say, for existing businesses, I met the chief exec, Fraser Thompson, of Chapel Down Wines. And in 2014, they raised, I think it was £3.9 million in 10 days. And he'd got VCs queuing up to invest, and they wanted to diversify. They were building a brewery to produce their Curious Brew range of beers. And he told me he had VCs queuing up to invest in it, but he wanted to go down the route of crowdfunding. And he gained from it 1,500 personal investors who were brand ambassadors, and he said, never mind the money, so getting them on board was priceless.
Right, okay. I mean, it's obviously done BrewDog. I mean, to mention the BrewDog word, they pioneered it to a certain extent within that, and to have those fanboys almost, it's like the Apple thing, isn't it?
Yeah, they look like idiots now.
I mean, it's debatable the long term.
Well, no, because I think the problem with that was that they genuinely believed what they were doing was getting a slice of the business. Mm. And I think they were very cute how they did it. And I think how they, you know, they positioned it was, I think it's, for me, it wasn't what it said on the tin.
Yeah.
Because when you see them being invested into, these people were generally expecting a windfall. Mm. They wanted to phone up and say, well, what's my money worth now? Sorry, it's not like, doesn't work like that. But they get 10% off online forever, you know. But so they're about, I think they are one of the worst examples.
Let's maybe just step back. I mean, Clive, just give us a nutshell. I mean, what is, in its purest essence, what is crowdfunding for those who are not familiar?
Crowdfunding is a means for businesses to secure funding, getting relatively small amounts from a large number of people, rather than going to a bank manager or some other lender and trying to get the whole lot in an all or nothing conversation. You can make your pitch online with video, pitch deck, written words and photos and whatever, and put your message out to a vast number of people.
Mm. And I mean, from somebody looking to invest into crowdfunding, I mean, what are the benefits to that? Why would you do it? I mean, as James said, you know, it's not like necessarily the standard kind of thing. Is it just tapping into that love for a business, or can it be a viable investment?
There are, I mean, going back to the example that you said earlier with Heath, I mean, if people want to have a vested interest in maintaining an existing business that they like and they want to be able to go back to. But you mentioned using crowdfunding to make an investment. And it's really opened the way, democratised being able to invest in privately owned companies. Some of those are very exciting. There are lots of reasons to get involved. I mean, one is the benefits available through HMRC. I mean, it's very rare that we talk about the good things they do. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, someone putting money into a crowdfunding project for a business that's registered under the Enterprise Investment Scheme, I mean, as soon as you've pledged your money, you can start claiming 30% of it back from the HMRC.
Okay.
If the business goes belly up, you can claim back even more. If the business is successful, the returns are sheltered from capital gains tax. So it's...
I'm going to use my bounce back line.
I was going to say.
then there are other benefits that the individual fundraisers may be prepared to offer. At the weekend, I was up at the East London Liquor Company distillery in Mile End, picking up my T-shirt and my bottle of gin as my reward for being an investor in their latest round of crowdfunding. I went to an event organised by a craft brewery that had raised money on crowdfunding. I met a guy, all he did was invest in all sorts of craft breweries all over. This was his hobby. He stood long term potentially to make a good financial return, but that wasn't what drove him. He retired. This was his hobby. He liked going to the events, meeting like minded people.
So it's almost an opportunity to tap into some of those sort of enthusiastic
and there were a number of breweries that offered him an online discount.
Right, okay.
For buying things. So you can work out the equation. Yeah. How much have I got to buy online to save enough money that's paid for the initial amount that I've put in the first place? So people end up being like a free shareholder while they're enjoying the product.
Yeah. I mean, from the operator's point of view, if they're looking to set up a crowdfunding thing, you know, it sounds too good to be true. What are the pitfalls? What should they be thinking about when they're looking to do this?
Pitfalls. One of the biggest things that people underestimate is how much hard work is involved in it.
Right.
I mean, there's everything that has to be created and put together if you were just going to go to the bank or whatever, or angel investors or high net worth individuals. You've got to have your business plans, the projections, and all the legals sorted out. But on top of that, I mean, it's not a case with crowdfunding if you just put all this online, sit back, put your feet up for a few weeks, and then come back and see what's happened. This takes real concerted effort to keep driving it. Sometimes months before the crowdfunding actually starts, because you have to build up a network of people. The biggest thing about crowdfunding is that you need a crowd. There are the crowdfunding platforms that have got their own networks of investors, but they expect anyone who's raising money, particularly those selling equity, to bring a crowd with them as well.
So
hard work is the biggest thing.
You've got to have skin in the game to be
able to. Skin in the game, and as I say, this effort that's got to go into it. I mean, I've spoken to people who were considering using crowdfunding. I've spoken about all this intensity of what's largely social media effort that's needed. And they said, oh, that's okay, my kids use Facebook, they'll do it. And I'm having to say, no, this is, you know, I say, look, get someone in to take some of the daily load off you from the regular work that you do. Do not consider a holiday. Do not have anything to do with people that are ill, which would have been particularly relevant during COVID. You can't risk not being there. You may have people wanting to invest in you or check out what you're doing who are in other time zones. Or these requests for more information or a discussion could be coming in 24/7. Work out how you're going to be able to handle that.
Yeah, so it's a lot more effort than applying to the bank.
It is, but as I say, at the back end of it, you can get not only the money that's needed, but also you've recruited a whole new network of people to support your product, your brand, your company, or you've further rewarded existing customers and really lifted them higher up the brand loyalty ladder.
Yeah. I mean, James Heath, is it something that you would consider?
I don't know. I had a mate who's in finance. He described it to me as crowdfunding as the PPI claim of the future. And he's quite smart, so I was a bit like, oh, okay. We've talked about it. We have talked about it. It's my concern is having a lot of my customers coming in my new venture and telling me what they don't like and what I should do.
You get that anyway.
But I don't like people telling me what to do. So you imagine, oh, Heath, you should do this.
And have you thought about...
You'd just be sitting there going, oh, fuck off. But you'd be like, oh, God, you put some money in. Okay, yeah, great idea. Red curtains, great. I'll do that. Yeah, cool.
I mean, is that something you've found? Do you find that they've got a sense of entitlement, and then they think the business is
there? Yes, people who do get carried away with a sense of entitlement. But there are ways to be able to use that positively to create forums of customers and organise that kind of response on your terms.
Could you just get crowdfunding from another country? No one who's actually going to visit.
Yeah. You say that as an aside, but there has just been an introduction of harmonised regulations for crowdfunding right across the EU, which still includes the UK, despite Brexit, which is going to open up cross-border funding for UK businesses among people right across Europe.
And to Heath's point about PPR, I mean, do you think that's a fair comment?
There are very few, but there have been some cases, some examples of the Financial Conduct Authority telling the crowdfunding platforms that they've got to repay money to investors because they reckoned that the crowdfunding platform hadn't performed due diligence in checking through the claims that were being made by the people who wanted the money. Or they had raised the money and then did something different with it, which was different to what they put forward in like their prospectus at the outset. So it's happened a few times, but it has happened sometimes.
Yeah,
these equity crowdfunding platforms, they're regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. The biggest issue they've got is that there's so many things that they've got to be looking at. They're understaffed, and at the moment they're all threatening to go on strike under a threatened new different sort of pay structure regime.
Okay. So, problems there. We are pretty much at the time, but Clive, thank you for that. I mean, in summary, it sounds like it's worth looking at as an operator, but perhaps not something just to take lightly. It's a lot of work, there's a lot of commitment to it.
It sure is, yeah. Thanks very much for the opportunity to talk to you about this today.
Cheers. Thank you, Clive. You're listening to the Lock In podcast, and it's time to look at a serious issue for all operators at the moment, and that's the booming cost of utilities. To help us with that, we've got the fantastic Steve Alton from the BII joining us down the line. Steve, welcome.
How are you?
Good to have you. I mean, what are you hearing from members at the moment? You've actually done a survey, haven't you? I mean, what kind of things are coming through from that?
Well, I mean, we'll talk about inflation in a second, but you know, the time that inflation's hitting them, it's profitably for many. Most were down between 20 and 40%. Pandemic-specific debts, repayments have started to happen, but still, we've got around £40,000 average debt per pub. And one in three are out of cash. You know, the ones that they've got, it's probably got a couple of months at best. So it's pretty desperate. And then they're just seeing, you know, in huge rises, not just through utilities, which we'll come back to, but, you know, food and drink prices and wage inflation. And you've heard, again, the general press today about the impact that's had on the wider kind of hospitality wage bill. So All of that compounds. And it, for most of our members, it's running at double the national inflation rate in terms of input costs.
Right.
And as you know, what do you do with that? Because passing that straight on to consumer isn't going to work for many pubs. You know, you've heard yourself anywhere between 25p and 50p on a pint for those that are, you know, drinks led. But right now, you know, we still subdue trading. We're still trying to get consumers back into the habit of coming to the pub and putting that kind of price rise through. Most of our members are incredibly nervous of doing it. So right now it's pretty tough.
Should we be shying? I mean, we had this talk, I mean, during the sort of the troubles and lockdowns and things like that. And I know, Heath, you were very much kind of put your prices up. I mean, should we be shying away from it, though? Should we be worried about increasing prices at the moment? People are, a lot of the talk is the fact that prices
aren't
going
up. How do you carry it, though?
Well, we've
got nothing in the
coffers. People are attuned to the fact that prices are going to go up, aren't they?
Yeah, but I'm saying you have to put them up because you can't carry you can't just put yourself more and more debt because you're afraid of scaring customers off.
Yeah.
So you've got, you know what I mean? It's got to be within reason. So,
but also, if you responded to every increase on your menu, you'd just be, the numbers would be crazy. Mm. Do you know what I mean? There's somewhere in between. It's a bit like you're expecting the public to go, yeah, we really understand pub. We really understand it's been half year and we're happy to pay another pound for the burger. Mm. They're not. And it's a bit like when people say, I'm going to give myself kids health food. When they're bitching in the back, they'll take them through McDonald's. Do you know what I mean? It's just not, it's just double standards. And I think we're kidding ourselves if we expect the consumer to go easy on us and understand.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, what are you saying?
I think it's a balance. We spoke about, we had a big event last week talking about experiential, you know, which is so key. So, you know, I think first thing we're going to tackle is everybody's come out of lockdown. Expectations are a lot higher. A lot of people have tried different food and drink concepts at home as well. And quality is everything. So I think now, I talked last week at a presentation around the death of mediocrity. And we talked about that theme before, but we're very much there. You know, consumers will not accept now a mediocre delivery. And if that's a poorly served pint in a wrong piece of glassware, or, you know, tipping over the sides, or just, you know, not a fresh pint, or poorly presented food, I think right now, you know, it's going to be game over. You get one chance to do it. Now, look, if you're delivering exceptional quality and the service is there as well, and I do mean service, I mean the smile, the engagement, you know, the feel that great pubs generate, then you probably have got the ability to be a little bit more robust with pricing. But I agree with the other comments. You know, there's got to be a limit to that as you're trying to rebuild momentum. But look, the flip side is true as well. You know, GPs aren't what they are. You know, they're under tremendous pressure, and now you've got to rip through every single line item and be as hard and as tough and as value driven as you possibly can. And that's for the member stories we've got in, the best impact is when they get the whole team on board. because the whole team have an ability to influence it. So you go back to utilities, which is where you started. You know, everybody needs to be really focused on energy usage, because quite frankly, out there, they aren't the deals. You know, as much as we've got some great brokers and a placement right at the energy market as a whole is in a really tough spot. So it's about how do you reduce consumption, and you need to go back to the basics. So we've got some brilliant members who've gone for long-term schemes. I mean, Richard Slade, one of our long-term members, he's been doing this for 12 years. You know, he's down to 85% reduction on his carbon footprint. He's got solar, he's got wood chip. You know, he's brought the whole, in essence, he's got a very clever insulation system through his whole site. But that was a hell of a journey. There's capital investment, a longer-term payback. And as I said at the start of this, a lot of our members don't have those resources. In fact, they're very nervous for taking any further debts on top of what they've already got, because they know they're going to have to overtrade 2019 numbers now to pretty much stand still. Yeah. But equally, you know, we've got other members, Richard Holden. You know, he's just tasked the whole team. They're ripping through everything from, you know, it's their yields in their draft, through to basic, you know, waste management systems, through to smart use of, you know, thermostats, LED lighting. We've got all this outside space. A lot of people put ceramic heaters in and lighting. We've got these things on smart systems that are switched off when people aren't using those areas. So there's quite a lot of things that, hey, look, we don't have to open too many, and the cellar door will not be insulated before it's open.
Yes.
You know, so you've got a cold room leaching into a warm pub. So you've got to start with the basics. But equally, there are some great schemes for those that do have the ability or will or can work with landlords particularly to put longer-term investment in, because this isn't going away. This is not a short-term blip. You know, we know we've got this, you know, I suppose, significantly greater use of power in utilities than other businesses. And we've got to tackle it head on. Equally, look, consumers are reaching out for green credentials. So I don't think it's just a virtue signalling exercise. One, it can save you real money. And two, you know, those that have got real green credentials, I think it resonates incredibly well with consumers of today.
I mean, you guys, I mean, Heath James, are you doing any of this? Are you talking to your staff? Looking at schemes?
Yeah, I mean, things like, you know, chefs can be quite lazy, coming in the morning, firing everything up, then thinking about what they've got to do. So you'll have your salamander on at, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning, and you actually need it for service at midday.
Yeah.
So it's just a little bit of that conversation going around. So that would be kind of the, I mean, I naturally, from my Scottish roots, just turn the lights out when I leave the room, you know, so it's just
the pub's dark every day.
Whether there's customers in there or
exactly,
not.
Exactly. So
the good thing about it is all the staff are experiencing these same rises in electricity costs as well. So when you say, oh, my electricity bill was 1500, now it's $3,000, they go, wow, okay. So close the doors, turn the lights off, you know what I mean? The amount of times you walk into the office, all the lights on, everything's on. There's no need for it.
Yeah. I mean, what about green initiatives? Are you in, done anything on that? Is there any scope within your...
Done some insulating in the older pub.
Yeah.
Done some double glazing, you know. But again, it's cash flow. It's money. Do you want to take on more debt? It's We're just getting beaten, so it's just trying to choose your battles, really. You know?
This is the challenge, isn't it, Steve? I suppose it's all well and good to talk about, you know, sustainable initiatives and things like this, but it doesn't come free. And when you're looking at sort of limited cash flow, lots of debt, all the rest of it. I mean, is there any help out there for operators if they're thinking about sort of putting in some kind of solar heating or solar systems? Is there anything out there?
Yeah, there are schemes, there are grants. You know, this is part of a longer term, you know, government drive. As you know, I mean, they're focusing on the kind of the EPC, so the energy, you know, performance certificates, and trying to improve, you know, the efficiency of pubs. And I think there's going to be a longer term pressure to improve all those buildings anyway. So I'm sure there'll be further initiatives. But as the guy said, look, at the minute, it's about survival. And this is the issue. You know, we're in this incredible tight spot now where trade is still subdued. We've not bounced back fully. We're dragging this debt load with us. And quite frankly, now profitability is, you know, really being squeezed. So I think, as the guy's intimated, it starts with the basics. One is get your team on board. You know, you've got to get your team serious about this stuff. I know, you know, joking about switching the lights off when you leave the room, but these are serious issues. This is a, you know, that can make a real difference when you're talking about small percentages. if it is flicking, you know, lights into LEDs, I mean, outside, you know, how many pubs have you seen, you know, lit up, probably not at the right time?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's not cheap. And you know, walking down the high streets, there's things that we can change. Mm. If it's basic insulation in the roof, you know, forget the more complex insulation systems, there are things that we can do. But I do think you've got to target your team on it. This is as important now as them not wasting beer or not doing huge food waste. I think I'm absolutely right. You know, if you're firing those kitchens up, are there smarter ways of working? Is there things you can do with your menus that are a little bit more efficient in that space? Mm. So I think there are a lot of things you can do. It's not going to make, you know, a wholesale difference at this point. I think you are looking at 10, if you can get your consumption down 10 or 20%, that's material to these sites.
Yeah.
And right now, you know, that's where they're going to have to start. About.
Yeah. I remember speaking to one operator, actually, they'd come up with a fairly clever system where they colour-coded the lights so that the cleaners, when they came in the morning, knew which ones they had to put on to do certain areas and just kind of sort of controlled that to run. And in the past, they'd just come in and whoomph, all the lights on.
Yeah.
It was, you only need these on for this.
Yeah.
Just use that, which isn't a bad thing.
I can't get my cleaner to mop the floor properly. Now you want me to give it to you the light switches
about that this morning.
Well, look, I mean, if you're getting your wife to clean the pub for you, Pete, then
wouldn't that be amazing?
Brilliant. Okay, see, well, I'm conscious of the time. We're pretty much out of it, but thank you very much for that. Some good thoughts, sir, and things for people to think about. Cheers. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Thanks.
This is the Lock-In Podcast with myself, Ed Bennington, Heath Ball and James Cuthbertson. We're focusing on finances in this episode, and one area we've not yet touched upon is investment. We're recording this in the amazing Cadogan Arms in Chelsea. A recent strong investment has brought this site back to life, and we're delighted to be joined by MD Dom Jacobs to talk to us about that and other investments that his business is making. So, I mean, Dom, just welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a bit about the Cadogan Arms. I keep pronouncing that correctly because I messed it right up at the start. So
Cadogan, I think that's correct. We opened in July 2020. So we actually opened, 2021. We actually opened in Freedom Week.
Right.
So the week that restrictions were relaxed. And it's had a pretty strong start through there. It was a complete refurbishment. So the Cadogan Arms itself was a complete shell.
Was it closed? It was a closed site.
It'd been closed for 6 years. So as is quite commonplace in London, particularly the landlords who were the Cadogan State taken back the venue to refurbish the floors above.
Right.
And separate them for residential, leaving the ground floor and the basement fully stripped out. And traditionally, I think the pub, it didn't really have a great deal of historic interest inside at the time. Through successive landlords over the years, there wasn't any real architectural relevance left in the building. So although the building itself is listed, the internal features, there was nothing of relevance. So it had been stripped back to a concrete core, which gave us a complete blank canvas to invest in the fit-up, really.
Right. I mean, that's quite a nice thing to have, isn't it?
It is, actually. And having also now refurbished a pub which did have a lot of internal listed features, I walked into the George and thought, you know, half of this is done. It's great. But actually, it is a far easier build to have a blank canvas as such, as opposed to going in and uncovering all of the everything that we lifted up in the George, everything we took off, uncovered a new problem which had to be fixed. And certainly our teams much preferred the fit out at the Cadogan for that reason.
So the George is your other site?
Second site, and opened just before Christmas.
Right, okay.
And we've done that in two phases. So the ground floor opened before Christmas. The first floor is fully opening the 2nd of March.
Right, okay. And I mean, so obviously you took on these projects during the pandemic, or was this planned before the pandemic? I mean, talk us through that. How?
So the sites were, had kind of plans on the sites pre-pandemic. And then obviously the pandemic happened, and then I think it would be natural to think, obviously we had to take a step back and look at what's going on. It would be natural to shy away from it, I think, in the circumstances. But my confidence was certainly buoyed by the general public's reaction and reception to pubs on any of the kind of reopening and unlocking phases. No one seemed to be all that bothered about seeing their grandma after the pandemic. All the countdowns were when you could have a pint. And for me, it didn't matter who I spoke to when during lockdown, whether it be an Uber driver or any single person that I spoke to about what they were looking forward to when the world reopened. And every single person I spoke to said having a pint. So I think there's very much a case of you don't really know what you've got till it's gone. And you know, even myself included, I'm a publican and have been for 10 years, so I didn't realise how much my life revolved around pubs outside of work and how much I would miss the informality and everything that they offer. So there's definitely been a renewed sense of a renewed love for the pub, and recognising this great sort of national asset, which, you know, anything that you do, if you go meet a friend for a walk, it's always around a pub. You're going to meet someone in town to go and do something. Where do you meet? You meet in a pub. And there's something so wonderful and informal about pubs that, you know, when it's gone, everyone missed it.
Imagine if our Prime Minister spoke like that.
Yeah.
Imagine the change you would have in hospitality.
Yeah.
You're going to make him out of the government every time, aren't you?
Mate, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, but that obviously gave you the confidence to go ahead to do these things. I mean, did the restrictions, the pandemic, how did that complicate the work? Were there any benefits to that at all? Did things get cheaper?
No. No, I think, and actually, you know, we've all heard about price increases across the board, and that's everything now. So even the difference between doing the Cadogan and the George, there was an uplift in costs of raw materials. And actually, particularly with the Cadogan, I really feel that if we had started the fit out 3 or 4 weeks later, the impact would have been, you know, it may have been delayed by months just because the, you know, things like just like brass, for example, yeah. All of our fonts had to be made bespoke again because there weren't any fonts in the UK. Things which were initially off the shelf for 2 weeks, suddenly they weren't available and nobody could get hold of brass, and the cost of brass went up. So, you know, certainly things are getting better now, but it's we know there are increases across the board. So. Certainly hasn't got cheaper, and the challenges in terms of getting supplies in were so great that we did two refurbishments relatively close together, and learning from the first one, we ordered equipment during the first fit out to be delivered for the second one, and
right, okay.
12 week wait times were quite normal at that point, and yeah. It's a challenge.
And in terms of the investment, I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask you how much or anything like that, but how are you funding?
Yeah.
Pick a figure. Yeah. No. I mean, how have you funded the investment? Is it just a private investment? I mean, what have you...
So private investment. I think... I don't think people have invested in pubs quite in the way that we have for quite a while. And when I look at them, there's a... If you're looking at opening a restaurant, generally you're looking at a 12 to 3, 6 till 10 kind of a time. And when you take a sort of longer view on pubs, they really are remarkable things. If you get the balance right, you really it's the true all-day dining, drinking concept, and so I see a return at 4 or 5 o'clock. You know, it's 5 o'clock and people drinking cocktails for 4:30 on a Monday, and there's still service going on. You don't get that in other industries, so I feel comfortable that there's a return on it.
Oh, you said not many people make investment. I mean, you did, without saying, look, there's significant investment into these sites, isn't it? I mean, you're
very much so. Yeah, I'd say, hopefully the return is also great relative to other comparable investments. I think one thing that we learned early on, and early on in the process, as you walk into a venue, and certainly with the Cadogan Arms, that was a complete blank shell to start with. As you walk through the door, there are so many reference points that you get in pubs that we know and love, and the history that they have in them. And those reference points are things like wallpaper, things like the tiles, things like the woodwork, things like the panelling, Lincrusta wallpaper, incredible ornate tiles. All of these points that we kind of take for granted in pubs, because they've always been there, they're generally listed, and it makes you feel like you're in a pub straight away. When you try and do that from scratch now, the reality was, when those were put in place originally by landlords, the breweries were very, very wealthy and the labour was very, very cheap. And so there's a lot of history and a lot of historic assets which immediately draw you to think you're a pub. When you put that in from scratch now, a tile costs £6-7. A metre of Lincrusta wallpaper is, you know, £400 at times. And so before you know it, the costs go up. It's exactly those things which make you feel like you're in a pub and not a brasserie, not a bistro, not a restaurant.
Yeah, so you don't regret spending. I mean, you could have gone for a different look and feel. I mean, we see this in pubs.
Yeah.
Pubs can be very different, and modern pubs, certainly, you know, the new builds or new fit outs that you see can be anything from kind of very urban and sort of industrial to more kind of traditional.
Yeah, I think you're right. You can definitely save money on doing certain things. But going back to my point earlier, that if you get it right with a pub, you really do have a full all day. A concept, you're generating revenue all throughout the day because people fall in. If you go too far down that industrial route, or if you go too far down the more modern route, then you lose that pub charm and you lose that general feeling, which is what everybody feels comfortable with.
There's a timelessness to this sort of design as well, isn't there?
Sorry,
there's a timelessness to it. As
definitely,
well.
And absolutely, 100%. And I guess there's a timelessness and but you also, I guess the other side of that is you get to pick a time when you want to kind of capture. So we went for kind of like mid-Georgian here for all of our reference points, which is around the time in the 1850s when the pub thrived. But it's a classic, and one thing that was quite, made you feel quite privileged in a way, was and humbled, is when we were putting this in, we now know that the fit out that we're putting in will probably, the bare bones of it will be in place here for potentially 30, 40, 50 years. If you were to just fit out a restaurant tomorrow, what's the lifespan of most restaurants? Someone goes in, strips it out, puts something else in, the new fad in, whatever the new fad's going to be in 10 years. Whereas people who come in, you know, the carcass of the bar, and hopefully the bar itself will stay in place for a long time. So we've done it now, and we've done it for now, but there's also a reality that in the future that needs to be here for a long time. So there's something quite humbling about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of sort of length of time on payback, I mean, what are you expecting? Is it?
It's very hard to say. I think obviously you hope that you might be looking at three years or so. You want to better that, or it could be worse. I think
how patient your investors are, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. But there are so many points to this. I'm sure you've been talking throughout the afternoon about all the pressures that are faced. So cost pressures are there, and every you know, every percentage here, there, and everywhere can make a big impact in that. I mean, for me, that's a good. It's a good benchmark. If you can do less than that, brilliant.
Yeah.
If it's more, so long as you can see growth in it, then that's also.
So, and in terms of other sites, I mean, are you looking to sort of roll out and bring others on board?
Yeah, always interested in new sites. In terms of a, I think maybe a rollout is the wrong word. I think everybody has seen the collapse of the casual dining market, and that rollout doesn't really work as well as potentially before. The key thing for me is the sites have to have they have to be interesting. They've got to have a historical relevance. I think there's a size profile that works. Having just done the George, you see how certainly these old pubs, that you know, they're expensive to do in the right way. If you really want to make the sites work get those returns on investment, then there's a significant amount of infrastructure that has to go in to make sure that they're capable of.
Because the George was a shell, wasn't it? It wasn't. The bar was there. I looked at it when it was on the market, and I was like.
Yes,
literally, the gas was capped downstairs. And you were replumbing.
Yeah,
yeah, you're replumbing that old
definitely.
Building.
Yeah, and it really is old. Yeah. And as you said, a shell. That's where I guess when I looked at it to start with, I thought, you know, polish the panelling,
yeah.
Get that going, and then you really, you know, you start getting the quotes in for what you want to do. And I think that the key thing being fit for purpose. I've operated pubs for 10 years and operated a lot of older pubs which you know, haven't had the investment to start with, and they're incredibly charming for the guests, and there's a lot of aspects to them which you know, make the guest experience, I guess, from their side feel like they're in an old pub, but you very much feel like you're in an old pub operating. And being able to build something which, you know, the dumb waiter's in the right place, you're building something,
the plumbing works
you know, the plumbing works, the you know, you've got sufficient power loading.
Yes, yeah.
All of these things are so important if you really want to drive something to the next step, which ultimately creates employment. It can creates a lot. It's amazing when I see what we require to run a service throughout the week, and then you can look at another pub which might be fairly similar in size, and there's only 2-3 people working there. So yeah. there's a lot of return in some of these opportunities. But yeah, having you can't really do it much for the back of house side of things.
Yeah.
You know, once you start putting that infrastructure in, it's very hard to reduce those costs realistically. Yes. If you're making something fit for purpose for the next 10-15 years. And with that comes there has to be a certain square footage in reality.
Yeah.
A dumbwaiter that goes up 3 floors, you know, you don't really change whether it's for slightly fewer covers or slightly more covers. That doesn't change in costs. Same with extraction. If you're doing an extraction run, those costs don't really change that much. The plumbing is going to be roughly the same. There's a certain size profile I think you have to work to build something that's right. And another important thing now is that what we've learned during the last 2 years, more than ever, is people have exited our sector, that our staff welfare is a really important consideration now. And I guess it always was for responsible operators, but now more than ever, you know, why would you have a venue that doesn't have a staff room? Why would you have a venue that doesn't have certain facilities for the team? And that's something that going forward we really need to make sure we factor into every property feasibility from the get-go, and I think it's something important that the whole industry adopts, so that when talking to landlords, they're not assuming that the entire square footage of the venue is going to go towards sales space.
Yeah.
If you can't fit a suitable changing room or a suitable staff room in, then perhaps that's not an investment that we should be willing to make.
Yeah.
I think that's something that should be adopted now going forward. I guess they're relatively small things, but compounded when you add it all together.
Mm.
It does have an impact in how.
Absolutely. Conscious we're out of time, we'll probably need to pick over that in a bit more detail, and we may well do that down the line. But Dom, thank you very much for that.
My pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Dom. Cheers, Dom.
Thanks.
You are listening to the Lock In Podcast, and we are at the end of this week's episode. I mean, we've been talking about finance today. It's an immensely topical subject with everything that's going on, and obviously with March coming up, we've got that cliff edge of debt facing lots of people. I mean, we've heard quite a lot today, guys. I mean, what's been your key takeaways from this?
I think if you're getting in trouble, and you think you're getting in trouble, speak to the, you know, get in touch with someone sooner than later. Do you know what I mean? I think, look, from the sounds of it, it can be saved. Like Chris was saying, you know, you can get around it.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of bloodthirsty people looking to pick up a bargain as well, so don't fall foul of them by getting your house in order.
I mean, crowdfunding, is that something that you think you would
I still can't get my... I mean, horses for courses, I get the argument about creating this band of law followers that will extol the virtues of your business and behaviours, you know. Well, actually, that's the bit that scares me, behaving as owners. Yeah, what colour the curtains are going to be, and you just want to punch them in the face because they're not the ones.
I mean, you have that anyway, though, don't you? But I suppose it's when they've got a sense of entitlement.
No, that's
Even more entitlement.
Why can't I get a table? I'm one of the owners. You're like, not one of the owners.
Yeah.
And that's where I think that's my issue with it. I think it's disingenuous. You're trying to bill it like them being an owner, but when it comes down to it, you don't view them as that. You know, I don't know anyone that really engaged.
Well, I mean, is that what is wrong with crowdfunding? Because if you were an investor, for example, if you had shares, I mean, I've got shares in TSB. I don't walk into a TSB branch and demand that they give me an office.
I could see
them
doing that.
I might try it. Actually, it's not a bad idea.
Do you know who I am?
Yes, I've got £50 worth of shares in TSB that my mum bought me when I was six.
Don't look me in the eye, boy.
I might try that. But I mean, is you don't get that with shares, do you? So I mean, is that inherently wrong with crown, or is it the way it's sold?
No, I think it's inherently depends on your situation as an operator. If you don't want to be told what to do, save your money up and do what you can. If you have to accelerate your business and want to by taking funding, know that the bank will either take it away from you if you screw it up, or the investors will want some sort of input, whether they're big investors or small investors. Don't kid yourself otherwise. You're dancing with the devil, but know you're doing it. Don't pretend you haven't, because that's eyes wide open. Save your money up, slow growth, or, you know, commit to something else, but know what comes with it.
Yeah.
Simple.
Fantastic. And Heath, you're going to be training your cleaner to switch off the lights, right?
Oh, man. It's a thing, though, isn't it? You know, I mean, you're trying to save pennies, but you're losing pounds. It's just so...
That's why the pennies add up to pounds, don't they?
It's just so expensive, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, if the cleaners did that, the staff did that, but, you know...
You'd save a fiver.
Yeah, exactly. The bills have gone up so much, it's ridiculous. And we know VAT's not going to be held at 12.5%. Kate Nichols will send out loads more texts and tweets about it and all that, and make us feel like we've got some voice, but we don't.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. Yeah. Sorry to be doom and gloom, but I think we're fucked.
Well, anything from normal there, Heath, I think. I mean, one of the key takeaways I would say that I've learned from recording this podcast is not to sit James in a window of a pub on the King's Road, because he's very easily distracted.
Keeps on looking at guys in fancy coats.
Yeah. It's not just the guys he keeps looking at, Heath.
Oh, really?
Like a meerkat over here. I haven't listened to a word you two have said all day.
It's the licking of the window that worries me, James.
Just dying up a third wife. On Valentine's Day of
Valentine's
all days.
Day. Yeah, so hot dates lined up then, boys?
I'm like, yep.
I'm going to work tonight, so I don't have to listen to her complain that I've done nothing for Valentine's Day.
Brilliant.
So while you've been talking, Ed, I'm pretty much going, yep, Yeah. No, really should be wearing a mask.
Yeah. Right, 5 out of 10.
Oh, Edward, these aren't pieces of meat walking past. These are someone's, you know, someone's children.
I was talking about their people.
No, no, children. Well, I mean that. I mean, they're like older kids. Like, oh, I don't know. Jesus.
Oh, I think I'm.
Now I've offended the religious people.
I might have to wind this one up now. I think that's it's probably going to be safer, isn't it?
Well, we talked about winding up businesses today.
We have talked about winding up businesses.
That's the final podcast.
So there we go. Yes. Yeah, the last one. No, it isn't. We will be back in a couple of weeks' time. We haven't actually decided what we're going to talk about, but it'll probably involve pubs, I imagine.
Lawsuits.
Lawsuits from resulting from this one, possibly, yeah, as well. But thank you guys for that.
Probably be at war by then, Ed. So, yeah.
Well, that's cheerful from Heath. Nice note to end on.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Fine.
See you in a couple of weeks.